Well, some time ago, I mentioned a program that Brother Ken had told me about, a Dr. James Kennedy that preaches on Channel 2 at 7 o'clock in the morning. And if you listened at him this morning, you've got a double dose in store for today, because as I left off last week on that matter of giving and how that method had failed, that the early church took up on their own, mentioned that I'd hopefully take that up again and talk some more along that line this week, and that's what his subject was this morning also. I'd like for us to look, first of all, in the book of Malachi, chapter 3 of Malachi, and starting with verse 8. That Malachi is the last little book of the Old Testament before Matthew. Malachi chapter 3, starting with verse 8. This just kind of opens up this subject that we'll try to talk about, God willing, this morning. Will a man rob God? Will a man rob God? Now, we know that God is sovereign, that He is mighty in power, that there are no thieves who can break through and steal in heaven. Yet there is a way that people do and can rob God. Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. God invites His people there to prove Him, to put Him to the test and see. He says, if I will not pour you out a blessing, that there will not be room to receive it. Now, he mentioned there in that command, tithes and offerings. Bring all the tithes and offerings into the storehouse. The great question is, are we still supposed to be tithing today in the New Testament church? Is tithing still a requirement as it was under the law in the New Testament church? There's not much said in the New Testament about tithing, but there is a little. And I'll read the one verse particularly that speaks of it. Of course, there are a number of references made back to where tithing was required under the law, but not much about the present day situation which involved tithing in New Testament times. We'll read the one verse that I can think of that mentions something about that in Matthew 23 and verse 23. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 23, where we read these words, woe unto you. That's a powerful way of getting their attention. Woe unto you. The sixth chapter of the book of Amos starts out in that way. Woe unto them that are at ease in Zion. Now, we primitive Baptists like to find scriptures that really knock other folks for a loop and just knock their feet out from under them. But this one does that to us. Woe unto them that are at ease in Zion. So going back now to this verse in Matthew 23:23, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Now, when he said, these ought ye to have done, I'm not sure whether he's talking about the paying tithes of mint, anise, and cumin, or the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith, but it really don't matter because he said you should have done them both. These ought ye to have done, and not to have left the other undone. So both of them should have been done. The paying of the tithes and the observance of the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Now, before we jump to conclusions and think that I am advocating tithing in our day as a strict observance, I want to explain just exactly what the New Testament teaches. The Apostle Paul gave us in the New Testament what he called a better way, a more excellent way. Yet show I unto you a more excellent way. And that more excellent way was giving according as God hath prospered and as you have purposed in your heart. Now, we can determine in our minds whether that is more than 10%, which is a tithe, or less than 10%. And we can argue about that all day and still not come to any satisfactory conclusion. I'm sure it could be argued that we just can't afford to do that. We just can't afford to give that much in our present day with all of the different things we have to pay in this day and time. But to say that we cannot do what God has commanded is to accuse Him of failing because He has said that He would supply all of our needs according to His riches and glory by Jesus Christ. We're going to read that verse and show the context of it later on. He's able to supply all of those needs according to His riches in glory by Jesus Christ. Now I want to also show another instance of where God made a comparison to New Testament giving with Old Testament giving in the 9th chapter of 1 Corinthians. Almost all of this 9th chapter of 1 Corinthians is dedicated to ministerial support. That's not the only thing we are to give for in New Testament times, but that is one of the things that we are to have in mind in our giving. Starting with verse 11 of the 9th chapter of 1 Corinthians. He says, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, Is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Ministers whose sole spiritual things are to receive carnal things from those to whom they do the sowing of the spiritual things. If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Because he had been their very pastor and the very one who had established them as a Christian church to start with. He said, if others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? Making a reference back to the day of the Levites. You know, in Old Testament times, in the nation of Israel, there were 12 tribes of Israel. One of those tribes was the tribe of Levi. All of the tribes of Israel had an inheritance of land when they entered into the promised land, the land of Canaan. They all received land measured out to them, every man in every tribe, except for the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi had no inheritance. They were to administer the tithes and offerings that were brought in by the people, and they themselves were also to live off of those tithes and offerings. They were the ministering tribe. They had no inheritance in the land. They had no way of support in the land except to live off of what the other people brought in and offered in their tithes and offerings. Do ye not know? Now Paul is bringing this over into the New Testament as a lesson to us in our day. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel shall live of the gospel. There are some of our ministers who try to spiritualize that. But if that had been a spiritual lesson, the children of Levi, the tribe of Levi, could not have lived very long on spiritual blessings alone. It was temporal, literal, physical things they brought that they lived on. And the apostle said, even so. Just like that, hath the Lord ordained. Talk about the ordination of God. That's a strong word. God didn't suggest it. God didn't say it would be a good thing for you to consider. The Bible said God ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. Well, now we want to consider again some things that I said last weekend and before that on this matter of having all things common. That's really what got us started on this subject, is that fourth chapter of Acts where they had all things common. Every man would sell out and put into the common treasury, and it would be administered according as there was need. But it didn't work. There were people who took advantage of that situation. It hadn't been but two or three weeks since I saw on Tony Brown's journal, if any of you ever see that, where he had a would-be minister on there, and I guess I just have no right to say anything except that he was a minister. That minister was a pastor of a large church in the the black section of New York, that famous black section of New York, and they were involved in building houses for the homeless. And he was using this as a proof that the church should provide all kind of homes for the homeless and such as that, and saying that they should put all of their goods into one common treasury and it be ministered out according as there was need. That didn't work. We do not have a right to impose that kind of government upon a nation, because this was not a national government doing this in the first place. It was the New Testament church which was doing that. And we don't have any right to bind churches today to that kind of exercise, because it didn't work in the first place and it was corrected in the Apostle Paul's time. We'll turn now to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. And we're going to look in chapter 3 of 2 Thessalonians. We'll start reading with verse 7. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, starting with verse 7. For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an ensample unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. If any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. That everyone work and eat his own bread. Now there are exceptions to that. There are cases where there is to be help administered when this cannot be done because of various things that we'll see as we go along to some extent. Now verse 13, and then we will go on to something else. But ye, brethren, be not weary in well-doing. Be not weary in well-doing. Don't get tired. Don't get disgusted. Don't give up. Be not weary in well-doing. That expression is found in several places in the scriptures on this subject. Now, well, let's look at one other place as we go on in the third chapter of Colossians. The third chapter of Colossians, verse 5. I want to look at this verse very briefly. Colossians 3, 5. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth: fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness is therefore a violation of one of the Ten Commandments, where thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's idolatry. And this says covetousness is idolatry. Why is covetousness idolatry? Because it's the worship of the dollar, the worship of money and material things. I want to go now to the sixth chapter of the book of 1 Timothy. Sixth chapter of 1 Timothy. I know this is not popular, brethren and sisters, and I wish we could have gotten through the book of Acts without having to get on this subject. But it's there, and I want us to face it. I'm facing it myself. I want us all to face it to the very best we can and realize what the Bible teaches along this line. While it's not popular, and it's not a subject that I really enjoy dealing with, I recognize there's as great a need for us to have a good understanding of this as of anything else in the Bible. Why do I say that? Because our whole nation, it's almost embarrassing to me for those seven nations to have assembled in Paris, France this past week, and our president was there as a representative of one of the seven richest nations of the world. That's embarrassing to me that we have such a status as perhaps not just one of the seven, but maybe the richest nation in the world. It embarrasses me when I see people, including myself, that have such a drive for material things that we don't have time to do those things that the Bible instructs and commands us to do. We are all together too materialistic in our thinking today. We got laws passed now where you can't have a clothesline outside in certain subdivisions and certain sections because it runs down the property next to you. And if they were to have a sale and somebody come along and see clothes hanging out on the line, they wouldn't want to buy that house, or they would want it for a cheaper price, as well as other similar things. You got to have your mailbox fixed up and painted a certain color and on a certain type of stand and flowers painted around it and so on, because it runs down the people's property round about it. I think that's a sin and a disgrace. I think that's a slap in my mother's face, who raised her family with nothing else to do but with the clothes, if she wanted them clean and dry, except to hang them on the clothesline. We can't hardly get our house built until it's too little for us, or it don't look quite good enough for us, and we have to sell it and get a bigger one. The Bible speaks of that kind, that got his barns full, you know, and he still had food out there. Said, I will tear down my barns and build bigger barns. And God's woe and displeasure was pronounced upon that then, and it's certainly pronounced upon us today when we are so greedy that we have to have the very best of material things and neglect the inner man, neglect the soul, neglect the principle of God which is within us, and neglect His people about us, and neglect His churches and His ministers in order to have more of this world's goods. Well, we're warned about that in this sixth chapter of 1 Timothy. Starting with verse 9, we want to read several verses here. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Now, we like to joke around about that. All my life I've heard people joke around about that. Anything to keep from accepting it seriously. You know, people will say money is the root of all evil. Somebody chimes in and said, no, the love of money is the root of all evil. And so we laugh it off. without facing the gravity of that situation. It's no laughing matter. It's no joking matter. It said, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Now that's a good way, brethren and sisters, that's a good way for our life to be filled with sorrows. If we're expecting to receive joy from a good house, a fancy house, and worldly attainments, we're going to be sorry until our dying day because this... I was kidding with Leonard and Patsy, who were over the other night and visited a while, about my neighbor next door. I said, it makes me so mad. Every time I get out here and do some landscaping and try to fix up my yard, he does something better. He is always looking a little better than mine. You know. Well, of course, I was teasing and joking around about that. But probably deep down, there's a little bit of truth there. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life. That's what we have that's wonderful and precious. Lay hold. That is, sink your teeth into it. Get hold of it. Realize what you've got. And thank God for it. Lay hold upon it. Oh, when times get bad. When the bill collectors are like wolves at the back door. When you just seem like every time you take one step forward, you slide two back. If you've got the love of God in your heart, if you have a good hope through grace that you're His child, and He's your God, it don't matter. I'm telling you here with all the vitality I have, it don't matter if you have to spend your days in a tent. What really matters is when this present temporal life is ended, you have a building of God. You talk about a building. These others look like playhouses in comparison to that house not made with hands that all the redeemed of all the ages are going to live in some sweet day in glory. Sometimes we actually look down our noses at people that don't have as much as we do and maybe think God don't love them quite as much as He does us because they don't have much. God pity us from looking down on anyone because they might not have as much as we do. Because it's not that we've been so good. It's not that we deserve His favor in anything we have. I want to go on down to verse 17 and 18 of this same sixth chapter of Timothy. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. That they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. That they may lay hold upon it. That is, that they may embrace it and rejoice in it and enjoy it to its fullest. Now, I want to go back to Corinthians in the second book of Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. I wish I had time to read and comment on everything in chapters 8 and 9. I would highly recommend that at your next sitting with the Bible, you read the entire chapters of 8 and 9 of 2 Corinthians. They both are dealing with giving. Not giving to the ministry specifically, just giving in general. So we'll start with verse 1 of chapter 8 and go for a little ways there and maybe skip and get a few verses in the 9th chapter. Brethren, moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Their liberality. Now, I have turned that verse inside out and hind part before and every way I know how to turn it, and the only meaning I can get out of it is those who were liberal had great joy. On the other hand, those who were not liberal had deep poverty. Deep poverty of soul. There is not that bubbling joy in the life of a person who hogs everything and wants to keep it all for himself and will not give to others. But on the other hand, those who do give and do give freely and not grudgingly but cheerfully have inside of them that joy in giving, that thanksgiving that is so wonderful in the life of God's child. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power, they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this we did, not as we hoped, but first. This they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. Insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also. Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all diligence and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. Now, skipping down a little, I hate to skip any, but I must, if I cover everything I want to cover this morning, verse 12 and 13 and a few verses right in that connection. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. It is accepted according to that a man hath. If you're able to only give a dollar, and another person may be able to give 10, or may be able to give 100, you should not feel bad in giving the one. It is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. For I mean not that other men be eased, and ye burdened, but by any quality, that now at this present time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. Now I want to go to the 9th chapter and possibly start reading about verse 5. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as of covetousness. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully, every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. God loveth a cheerful giver. Now, I love this verse. I remember that old Sister Hauser that would come walking through the fields with her Sunday apron on. She had two aprons. One she wore at home during the week, and another she wore at church over her church-going dress so that she wouldn't mess up her dress, and her bonnet on to protect her face from the sun. And she would always put her quarter up for the preacher. And I remember the first time that it was ever my duty to speak, and a poor effort though it was, when service was over, she came up and tried to give me that quarter. And I didn't want to take it. I don't believe I did take it on that occasion. But some of the brethren talked to me and said, it's better for you to take it because the people have a great joy in giving to the Lord's servants. And it's cheating them out of a pleasure not to take it. So I have always accepted things that have been given to me by the Lord's people along the way. But this is the only reason I can do it. This eighth verse. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. As God's people give to the cause of Christ, His grace is able to bring about abundance in their lives. And we have to remember the case of Elijah and the widow woman, and Elisha and the pots of oil, the empty pots, when her two sons, talk about poverty. I guess we need to remember that a little once in a while. Poverty. We having hard times? Is it a struggle with us? Oh, it's a struggle, but it could be a lot worse. That widow woman had to go in debt. You talk about collateral. She had to put up her two sons for collateral. And she couldn't pay it off. She couldn't pay the debt, and the debtor was coming to get her sons. Talk about trouble. Now she had it. But this old prophet of God appeared on the scene. She told her troubles to him, and he said, have you got anything in the house of any value? And she said, I've got a little bit of oil in a pot. And he said, bring it to me and go borrow vessels, all the vessels you can borrow in the neighborhood. She sent her boys out, and they gathered. He started pouring oil into those empty vessels. And every time one was full, they'd bring him another. Finally, they ran out of vessels. And he said, are there not any more vessels? And they said, this is all we could get. He said, go sell it and pay off the debt on your son. Just out of that one little oil pot that she already had, he filled up every empty vessel there. Don't you wish God was like that nowadays? Aren't you sorry he's weakened with age? Or has he? No, he hasn't. He hasn't. He's still the same today that he's ever been. You can put your trust in him. You can trust him. You can be happy in your giving because God is able to make up that which is lacking in us. I thought I would have time to talk about some of the causes that we are to contribute to. Probably I'm not going to have time to do that, but maybe as I talk a little bit about this incident in the fourth chapter of Philippians, getting down to the joy of giving, maybe we'll start and cover a little bit one of these causes. in the fourth chapter of Philippians, starting with verse 15. It says, "Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only." No church communicated. He said, I was there, but they didn't give me anything. No church communicated with me. And I remember those old ministers in my boyhood days and the sacrifices they bore for the cause of Christ. Oh, you talk about heroes. You don't have to be a military hero to be a hero in my sight. Those heroes of the past, those men who were willing to sacrifice. Brother O'Neill was educated to be a lawyer and practiced law until God called him to preach the gospel. And he said, God either hadn't called me to be a lawyer or he hadn't called me to preach the gospel, because they just don't mix. And he gave up his law of practice and lived a self-sacrificing life. Leonard and I have been to his house a lot of times, and I can just in my mind see Sister O'Neill running around in her bare feet today, running to milk the cows and pick the garden and such as that, to put a feast on the table when you would go there. They had to live simple lives. But brethren, sisters, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. I'm afraid we were better off in those days when we were satisfied with a simple life more than we are today when we have to have so much of this world's goods. Paul said, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. Never will forget the time Brother O'Neill, it was told to me that he was called upon to preach a funeral some distance away from where he lived, and he only... could get there and had no money to get back on and had to depend on public transportation, and no one gave him anything to get back on, and he had to go somewhere and borrow money to get back home on. I can understand the feeling that Paul was in here. No church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity. Is it right for churches to send money to help ministers who are struggling in other areas? It's right to do that. It's right. We are not missionary in the sense of the modern missionary movement. We do not believe in a board sending ministers to foreign lands or anywhere else, but we believe that each local church should support ministers who are laboring in the gospel field wherever they are, every time we have opportunity to do so. And failure to do that is probably going to put us on the poverty heap in the long run if we're not careful to maintain that situation. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity, not because I desire a gift, but because I desire fruit that may abound to your account. Fruit that may abound to your account. What does he mean by that? Fruit that may abound to your account means that we have an account with God, and we can put something into it, and we can draw something out of it. And I dare say that some of you sitting under the sound of my voice today can look back at your years of faithful and sacrificial service and be glad. And today, lift up your voice in praise to God for enabling you to do something to help His ministers and to help His cause along the way. What a blessing it has been to do that for you. How you can rejoice that God has blessed you through the years to do that. Oh, He still will bless His children to do that. Now he says, but I have all and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell. Is it wrong to talk about money matters in the church and giving? What kind of an attitude does God have about it? He said, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. That's his attitude. A sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. But now, listen to this 19th verse. But my God shall, same shall that's in Matthew 1:21, he shall save his people, same shall. My God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Jesus Christ. And I should have put a period there. There is a period. He shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Jesus Christ. My God shall supply all of that need. One more and then I'll close. And this is in Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Let us not be weary in well-doing. Let us not be discouraged and want to give up. Be not weary. Be triumphant. Be giving thanks for this great blessing of doing something in the cause of God and truth. Much more could be said. I've barely hinted at this great subject. I hope you've been able to get some blessing at even the reading of these verses. Thank you.
Blessed are the saints who render faithful services of love to the Lord's dear little children as they seek those things above. He asked your breath upon the waters, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days. Blessed are they who go preaching without price, but trusting God, teaching as did the apostle, walking in the paths they trod. He asked your bread upon the waters, never asking if it pays. God has promised God sends, for he teaches that his his servants shall be fed from fields they tend. He asked your bread upon the waters, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days. They are favored to give freely of their substance and their time. For God loves a cheerful giver, and their joy shall be sublime. Cast your bread upon the waters, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days.
Anyone have anything you'd like to say about this time? No, they're on vacation, going to Florida, or probably be gone next weekend also. She's in South Georgia, spending some time with her relatives. Thankful that I could know where those two would be. Anything else?
I thank God that we have
Christ
in heaven.